First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springston Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. You can go for all the latest stories and different things we have going on, including the most recent podcast of this show. While you're at LouisvillePolitics.com, I would ask you, please join our email newsletter so we can make sure everything gets delivered direct to your inbox as it comes along. And if you also want to, please join the RSS feed. That will get you straight to this radio broadcast any chance you want to. I tell you, it's very interesting. It's been a long day, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on crazy stuff, so let's just really get started. For you guys in the listening queue, as always, hit that number one on your dial pad, and we know you want to be heard on air. For everybody else, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 are the numbers. And as always, you can join us in the live chat, which is open right now. And you can also sign in using your Facebook, Twitter accounts, anything like that. In the meantime, how are you, Mr. Martin?
I'm doing all right, Mr. Springson. It's a little wore out, but, you know, the heat's coming back. I'm not going to piss and moan about it. But,
well, I'll tell you.
There's a reason I play the lottery. It's because, you know, there's hot days and there's cold days at the shop, and I don't like either one. And the really, really pretty days, you're like, damn, I'm at work. So it's like,
yeah.
One of these days, I'm going to hit the lottery. I'm going to call in from, like, the Bahamas or something. Hey, guess where I'm at?
Hey, Ed, here's a little secret for you. You own the company, man. You go to Bahamas whenever you want to. Just pointing out the obvious.
Right. You've owned a company before. You know what a load of crap that is. It's like,
yes, I do. That's why I was able to say it.
On it because it's, you know, your house is mortgaged and, you know, and everything. You know, even a family dog is leveraged, you know. So it's like, well, there you go.
I hear you, man. I tell you, it's been an interesting 72 hours for me as well. This Glenn Mary story is going to be heating up, folks. We'll get a story out this week on the website at LouisvillePolitics.com, and you can check it out there. You can check out the prior stories we've already done. They're already up, kind of get you up to date. And we're going to probably have a story out there this week concerning the lawsuit with Greg Fisher. So by Jay Morgan, formerly of Ford Motor Company. So we're going to try to get a little bit of that out there this week, too. I tell you, Ed, as always, you know, we like to start with local stuff, and we may not even get off of local stuff tonight, and I tell you why. Some interesting things are coming up. Let's talk about the stupid story first. Saturday, the Courier-Journal was reporting about our good friend, Councilman Dan Johnson. I've got to talk about the story, and you know, honestly, I really don't. I kind of feel bad for the guy, but if he wasn't a councilman, who the hell would know? Well, in this particular case, I do. Could I tell you, for those of you who don't know, a company by the name of Edlund Company Fine Jewelers filed a lawsuit against Metro Councilman Dan Johnson in the 21st District. Ed, you're breaking up. Let me finish. What?
I've done business with Edlund. They're good people.
Yeah, they are. They are, and you know, so they filed a lawsuit in Jefferson District Court. Apparently, Dan Johnson had purchased some jewelry on January the 14th, and his check was returned on January the 27th, and he hasn't made good on the check. According to the lawsuit, they have tried to do everything they could to work with him to make him make good on the check. I think 7 months later is a good indication that they've really done the best they could. So anyway, he was finally served with court papers on Friday, even though the suit was filed June the 26th. Our good friend Tom McAdam is his attorney. Tom McAdam is also, quite frankly, my attorney on some cases. So, you know, he is an attorney for Dan Johnson, and he has agreed that Dan owes the money, that Dan is going to go ahead and pay it back right away, says it was an oversight. And for background information here, for those of you who don't know, Councilman Johnson does buy a lot of jewelry, watches, jewelry, pocket knives, things like that. He goes all over the place to flea markets and fairs in Kentucky and Tennessee and buys and sells that stuff all the time. So, now, you know, of course, we're playing the game here. You know, he does a lot of buying and selling and apparently lost track of this transaction, which is a farce. But anyway, long story short, you know, yeah, he screwed up, and yes, he should be forced to pay it. But, you know, there's a hell of a lot of people out there, me included. I mean, I think everybody has probably bounced at least one check in their life for one reason or another. Unfortunately, he's a Metro councilman and took 7 months to try to fix it, and that's what made it a story. Right?
Well, that makes the front end of the story. I mean, here's a guy who's well, I'm sorry, he's not working class. He's making, like, serious bank, but he's got insurance. It's not like the man who's good. He's got a retirement all queued up. He's, you know, he can let his previous L.A. go and hire an L.A. at $50,000 a year. You know, piss on him. I'm sorry, you know, he's in charge of the... It's on like the road committee, so he's in charge of six, if not seven, computer budgets, and he's going to fiddle around with a small business, drag their ass out for 7 months. Yeah, you're right. I've bounced checks before, and as soon as that notice shows up, it, you know, if I realize I've done it, it's like, man, you know, nowadays you just get on a computer and go, oh, crap.
No, right.
Well,
that's it.
So, you do what you got to do. You don't drag it out 7 months because, dude, that's going to piss anybody
else. Well,
you
know, I totally agree with you.
And the secondary story, and the one that I'm kind of meeting some people about on the interwebs, is, you know, Thomas McAdam, great guy. I mean, I always think, you know, there are a handful of lawyers that are actually, you know, disciples of the law, believers in the law, and Thomas is a jurist, and he's a good lawyer, so Dan's got a good lawyer. But the quote in the story was, you know, he does this all the time. He's moving a lot of this, a lot of that. I'm thinking, dude, if a $2,600, you know, just pretty much a $3,000 transaction just slipped under your radar, you must be moving a lot of stuff, you know, because I'm moving a lot of stuff through a warehouse, and $2,600 does not get away from me. So you're moving a lot of stuff. I would hope you're doing it at a profit. Now I'm thinking, dude, you got yourself one hell of a side business. If $2,800 is something you could just look. So how much are you moving, Dan? And how much profit are you doing? You have a business license for that? Are you paying taxes on that? Are you keeping good records on that? Are you buying stuff and a little cashy transaction here and, you know, doubling your money by folding it up and putting it in your pocket?
I think those are good questions. I think those are good questions, but considering it's a private business, we're not going to know
that
anyway.
This is the shit for brains that looks at people who are stripping to get by and says, get over it, when they track an assessment under their utility bills in terms of buying out of MSD, slamming the rates up. And, you know, it's like telling people, you get over it for your taxes and stuff. And it's like, hey, wait a minute, are you making money on the side and not paying taxes? I mean, this is not a kid mowing your grass for $12.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good point, but there's no way to prove that. You know what I mean?
I mean, like I'm saying, if he's moving $2,600, I'm saying if he's making 20%, dude, you've already you bumped up against the IRS reporting. You get $599 on $200. You pay. This is one transaction. I have to think Dan is making a little bit of money on the side and not reporting it. So I think he should be audited. I think we may find out. We may find out. We could be wrong. You know, you have to say that a lot yourself. I could be wrong, but I mean, let's face it. Evidence on the front end of this is Dan keeps pretty crappy records. When you keep crappy records, I can't imagine you're keeping accurate records and then reporting, you know, and then 1099-ing yourself or something at the end of the year. Dude, I think Dan might have himself a little side business going that's not paying taxes. And that's a huge story.
Well, I hear you. And I tell you, we're going to call this a two-for day for Dan Johnson because I kind of want to move on to the next story as well, Ed. According to the Courier-Journal, the other side of the Dan Johnson saga involves his new legislative assistant, Brian Matthews. Commonwealth Attorney Tom Wine and County Attorney Michael Connell both agreed that Matthews had a definite conflict by serving as an elected county official and working as a legislative aide to Dan Johnson. Wine put out his opinion on Thursday. Matthews went ahead and resigned the county judge position. Now, remember, this guy has been trying to convince the world how awesome being the county judge was, but he gave it up right away so he could keep the $50,000 that Dan Johnson is paying him. So he sent a resignation letter Thursday afternoon to governor's office, and the official statement is he did not want to further challenge in light of both the county attorney's position and the Commonwealth attorney's position. He does not believe he did anything inappropriate by accepting the LA job, but he didn't want to be a further distraction to Councilman Johnson. Folks, that's legal speak for the guy's not a fool. Jefferson County Judge Executive is a phony office that has nothing to do in Jefferson County. They don't have a paycheck, no authority, no rules, no nothing, and he wasn't going to give up a $50,000 cushy job to sit side by side with Dan Johnson not doing anything. So, you know, that's what that means.
You sit by Dan Johnson, Dan makes you look smart no matter who you are.
Oh, yeah. And then we've got, of course, the Assistant County Attorney Julie Hardesty. I love Julie Hardesty sometimes. But she gave a June 5th opinion on behalf of Michael Connell's office that said that, you know, Johnson, that Matthews could not fulfill both those jobs because of Section 165 of the Kentucky Constitution and KRS 61.080 prohibits citizens from filling two municipal offices at the same time. Now, what makes this story telling is, by Julie Hardesty's statement here, it makes David James's case for him. Because, as you know, the Metro Council and the leadership there, Michael Connell and everybody else, is trying to force David James to give up his job as a Louisville University police officer because he is an elected Metro Councilman. And see, that right there tells me there's a distinct difference here. Both of the jobs that Matthews had were elected positions, all right? David James' work as a private police officer for the University of Louisville has absolutely nothing to do with him being an elected council person, absolutely none. So I think that case is just made for David James, and if I was David James, I would be showing this thing to everybody and saying, see, it's a witch hunt, because he'd be right. Would you agree?
I would think so. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is, you know, municipal, they might want to push it and say, oh, well, you know, U of L gets taxpayer dollars, it's municipal, and it also gets also gets federal dollars and also gets private dollars and also gets tuition dollars. So it's not a purely municipal thing, and I don't think, you know, I think it helps make his case, and I don't think it blocks it yet because there is some public funding. But, yeah, I mean, the David James thing, we've known all along with the witch hunt. And, you know, I said all along, the Brian Matthews thing, we had a pretty good idea where that is, you know. And to go on the tangent there, Brad, I don't know him. He might be a totally nice guy. Ain't with Dan, so, you know, my grandfather used to say, if you want to tell me what you are, tell me who you hang with.
Right, right, right. I was waiting for you to go there, yeah.
And
that's...
But I, as we pretty much predicted, the Democratic caucus checked their nuts at the door and let an alleged racist, I guess you could say, is what the allegations were. They called him to move on from his previous job. Yeah, I guess Brian's digging in now. I guess he's queuing himself up for either taking over Dan's spot or at least locking down. He's starting a clock starting on that taxpayer-funded pension. So,
well, I agree. I just thought it was interesting that the Courier-Journal decided to try to make a case and throw David James in here as well over this story because it's really apples and oranges. I mean, when you look at the David James case, you can make that comparison to a Brent Ackerson. You can make that comparison to at least one or two board members at MSD as being two municipal offices, because if you're going to make the stretch that David James is working as a private police officer for the University of Louisville, you know, then you have to make that same claim against every lawyer, you know, and anybody else who takes a separate oath for anything they do. And that is really the reality of the situation. Since the mayor appoints everybody to the MSD board, and those appointees are who hires the legal counsel for MSD, you know, can we go so far as to stretch to say that if they really try to uphold this with David James, that they're going to create turmoil in every position that's ever appointed by the mayor? They don't like to say that MSD is Louisville. You know, it belongs to the city of Louisville, even though it does, de facto, if you will. But, you know, so I think this apples and oranges comparison, it just amazed me that the Courier is still trying to put that out there. And lo and behold, Michael Connell's office, you know, went to Jack Conway, who appointed a special prosecutor to look into the David James situation. Shelby County Commonwealth Attorney Laura Witt Donnell will be the one handling that case. You know, you look at all of these things. It's clear to me, if I was David James, I would claim witch hunt, and I would take this information out from the quotes in the Courier-Journal by Hardesty and a few others and just let nature take its course, because I just found it interesting that story is still going with David James. Matthews, I think, was a no-brainer. You know, Ed, we've got to, man, I tell you, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about this so-called rent reform study that the Louisville Metro Housing Authority was proposing to force residents in Section 8 housing, you know, to basically, you know, justify their existence, if you will. There was a hell of a lot of criticism and backlash from the fair housing advocates about this so-called study because they didn't like the fact it was going to set a minimum rent for some of the Section 8 recipients. So what they have done, the Louisville Housing Authority has now decided to back off a little bit. Instead of charging a $75 minimum rent for Section 8 recipients, you sure wish you could live a place for $75, don't you? Now they're going to drop it down to $50. And then anybody who is randomly selected to take part in this study was not mandatory to do. They could decide they don't want to do it. And they don't have to. So, you know, now everybody can opt out. All you got to do is say, shove it up your butt. You don't have to do it. And now you get a $50 minimum rent instead of $75. So, you know, and in addition to all of this, the study is not even going to include those people who get a deduction for child care off of their $50 rent. You know, all these different deductions they get off of that. So it's fascinating to me that, you know, what is the purpose of this study then? You're not interested in trying to find out anything, you know, and you're going to make it easier for people on Section 8 instead of giving them incentive to get off of Section 8. So what's the whole purpose of this study of wasting time, money, and resources?
It's a waste of time, money, and resources. Yeah. Give somebody a job, now nobody cares. Nobody, people care that are doing the study don't care. Now we're still going to spend a little money on it and just act like we, it's government at its worst. Let's form a blue ribbon committee. I want the blue ribbon committee.
Yeah, right.
Look into a problem that does or doesn't exist and come up with a solution that does or doesn't work for whatever. It's typical run-of-the-mill bullshit politics. Let's see if we can, talk smart. I always think when I see these things, I think of the old Mel Brooks movie, Blazing Saddles, when everybody sits around and goes, harumph, harumph. That's basically
right.
Where they're going, rhetoric.
right.
It's like a bad movie. It's like a Mel Brooks movie. It really is. It's like, let's do a study. Let's not force anybody to do it. Let's let the participants set the parameters and decide whether they want to go or not. What are we going to do with the study? Well, I don't know. So why are we doing the study? Well, it's a study, and it sounds good, and we've got we raised everybody's rates on LG&E ostensibly for police protection because we, maybe some of the people in the Section 8 can't control their kids downtown beating people up.
It does create that paradox because, you're sitting here saying, well, we're going to study this and study that, but you don't have to participate in the study, but we're going to pay for it anyway, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? I just don't understand this. If you're not going to hold firm to your commitment and you're not going to try to get accountability and you're not going to try to find the reasons people are on Section 8 or how you can help people that are on Section 8 improve their lives and get away from Section 8, then quit selling me this bill of goods and acting like you're doing something. We continue to have study after study. I'm in the same group you are with that, Ed. And I tell you, it's really insulting anymore. I mean, it shouldn't be, but it is. It's insulting anymore to find out how far these liberals, these progressive communists will go to make sure that people get something for nothing instead of working to help them. We continue to talk about helping people. We're not doing one damn thing to help them, are we?
Well, I don't even know if it's liberals. I think it often starts with them, the studies and when they are a certain target group. Yeah, we could easily say it's liberals, but I think this is just symptomatic of politics in general. Because I guarantee you, if we want to go looking, every national, state, and federal and local group of politicians, be they Republicans or Democrats, conservatives or liberals, they'll all sponsor a relatively useless study that they'll spend. They don't spend over $1 million on it. They're probably not going to draw too much attention, but they don't know why they're having the study. They construct the parameters poorly, if at all. And then when the
right.
study's done, they don't have a clue what to do with it. They never knew. They never had a clue what they were going to do with it. And it doesn't matter. Yes, in this case, liberals, but in all cases, it's just the political class. A lot of them aren't real smart, so they want to hire somebody who's slightly smarter than they are and to do a survey, to do a study. But then when they're done, nobody that's involved has a clue what to do with the data. They don't understand whether the data is corrupted or not or whether it's even useful or not. They don't care. They've got a study, and what that enables them to do in the long run is talk a bunch of crap, talk in a bunch of circles, and it enables them to not do anything and pass the buck to somebody else. So somebody says, well, why haven't we done, we did a study on that, and it was inconclusive, so we couldn't go forward with that. And the study ultimately will become a scapegoat of some sort for the politicians to do nothing once again.
Hey, you know what? You're absolutely right. Exactly 100% right in that. Paying for people to do absolutely nothing. And I want to get into a little bit of another example of how that's happening. After the break, we're going to talk about Congress and Yarmouth We're going to talk about his son, Aaron Yarmuth, who just took over local ownership of Leo Weekly. So you can now say that Congressman John Yarmuth has a free ad campaign for this election. But we'll get into stories about that. I think you guys are going to be interested in this. We'll talk about that right after the break. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me. When we go on break, I'm usually doing some research or talking to Ed in between and the listening queue, you know, just kind of get caught up on different things. And, this story with John Yarmuth is just, I think Ed's going to love this one. We're going to talk about it. Before I get into that, though, I want to remind you guys, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 are the numbers to call in. And if you're in the listening queue, as many of you are, we thank you, but hit that number one on your dial pad so we can make sure you get on air. Ed, we have a contrast here to me. It's very hypocritical to me, but Democratic Congressman John Yarmuth decided to hold a rally today with the other Democratic leaders around this town, screaming and yelling and pushing for a minimum wage of $10. Now, as we have pointed out many times on this show, and we'll continue to point out every chance we get, you know, you can continue raising minimum wage all you want to, folks, but that is not going to bring you prosperity. There are businesses out there such as yours, Mr. Martin, that don't pay any attention to minimum wage anyway because you already pay well above that. And here, I guess, is where I'm getting at. Yarmuth said that the current minimum wage of $7.25 is not enough to live on. He said the wage is insulting and inadequate. He says that the wage increase to $10 would not cause businesses to cut entry-level jobs. So what he goes on to say is what we're talking about basically is allowing businesses to have a business model that relies on welfare to subsidize their business model, and that's not fair to the taxpayers, nor is it fair to hardworking Americans. And he continues compounding that statement. He says, we know what it costs to live in this country, and $7.25 is totally inadequate. We know the economy grows when we raise the minimum wage. Here is the problem, Ed. If this fool thinks that anybody can live on $10 an hour and live a meaningful life, you can live on any money you make. It depends on what standard of living you want. You know, but to sit here and think that $10 an hour is going to make a difference in that mindset and a difference in everybody's job, he clearly lives in a delusional world. You're a small business owner. He says that the economy grows when we raise the minimum wage. That's a lie, is it not?
Well, it's an oversimplification. The economy grows when what something that's known as inherent net worth increases. And that doesn't just increase by somebody saying, oh, well, we're just going to pay some guy who half the time doesn't pass his drug test. we're going to pay him more. Well, that's not how you grow the economy. That's just one little aspect of it, what this guy makes or what this guy or gal makes. The way you grow the economy is the first thing is the either or, there's a job out there, or this individual improves their skill set, thus it improves their value. You know, you have to increase value. The government just wants to arbitrarily go, oh, we'll just pay them more. That makes them more valuable and it makes them worth more. No, it doesn't. It just makes it an out of kilter purchase of somebody's skill set. You want to earn more? Increase your skill set. There's jobs all over the place. There's a shortage of truck drivers, shortage of IT guys. So there are job shortages all over the place. You want to grow the economy, you do it by increasing the value of everything that's going on. You increase the value of the product or the labor being offered. And therein, the employer can pay you more because you bring more value to the table. So the government can just sit back and go, well, pay them more. That makes them worth more. It's like, no, it doesn't. It just makes it, not as intelligent a buy for the business. That's all that does.
Well, it's fascinating because, you talk about it increases the net worth and things like that. Let's look at the reality here. When you raise wages $2.75, as they're trying to mandate to everybody to do, your small business owners are going to raise prices to reflect that. Those raised prices are going to increase tax revenue. It's not going to make a difference in your life because you're going to spend that extra $2.75 an hour paying higher prices. So the only person who's going to benefit, the business will have a larger net worth because they're taking in more gross for selling products at a higher price. The government is going to have more net tax revenue, but the individual is not gaining anything. And that's what the fallacy of all this has always been about for me. I just don't get it. And what makes it even funnier is that John Yarmuth is so worried about paying great wages and keeping good talent and expects every business to do it, he made sure that his son, Aaron Yarmuth, just bought Leo Weekly back. Of course, he didn't have anything to do with it, we know, right? But, we know that's garbage. I mean, let's be real here, at least in my opinion anyway. But so Aaron Yarmuth, John Yarmuth's son, just bought Leo back in an election year, no doubt, right before the election. So John Yarmuth's going to get a lot of good airspace there. And the first thing he did was lay off a bunch of employees. He laid off two productive employees. And more importantly, he laid off two members of the advertising staff. If you're a business like Leo Weekly, all you do is you go around, knock door to door on businesses to sell ad space, and then you give these papers out free because of all the ad revenue you get at. That's what pays you. And the first thing you do is get rid of your advertising staff. What's the end game here? So if they're so worried about wages, Aaron Yarmuth specifically says, it's a bittersweet day. We just couldn't afford to keep all of these people, so we're going to go to freelance writers, blah, blah, blah. They couldn't afford to keep low-wage employees. What makes John Yarmuth think forcing a higher wage on the rest of the small business in this town is going to be any different? Go ahead.
Well, You know, I do want to hop in one time to finish up on the 10-10 thing. You're right. We start people off maybe below $10, but I tell, but nobody stays there very long if they are any good at anything. You know, hell, once they get insurance, it doesn't really matter what they pay, because we actually pay all our insurance for our employees, unlike John Yarmouth's companies. But
as we know, go ahead.
And I was going to say, and I've seen it before, I don't want to cast aspersions, but I've seen it before where people who get the benefits have actually opted in to be part-time. They've opted in to, you know, whatever, they want to underperform because the benefits have a certain non-taxable cash, you know, they have a value to them. So before you can do anything like, say, 10 an hour is going to solve anything, you also need to, you know, humanely put the government benefits in the way they're reduced on a sliding scale that's a little less brutal, because you're going to get a lot of employees going to go, well, okay, 10 an hour. They're going to look at their employer and say, you know, I really don't want to get many more hours than this. The employer's going to say, well, why? Well, because Section 8, you know, hell, if I make, you know, the minute I eclipse this mark, I've got to come up with $400 because I'm off of Section 8, man. I got to pay for my own apartment, that kind of thing. So they're, you know, it's complicated. So I think you will find in some cases you start offering people 10-10, you're going to go, I don't want 10-10, man. It puts me over a threshold where I lose a lot more in benefits than I'm picking up
right.
in wages. Now, I'm actually going to take Aaron Yarmouth's side in this, although it has to be somewhat humiliating for Daddy. You know, he's speechifying all over the place, telling everybody.
Now, wait a minute. I want to point this out real quick, okay, for me anyway. I firmly believe John Yarmuth had plenty to do with this situation with his son and who they let off. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, well, prove it. Well, you know, I don't have physical proof in front of me to do that. Just from my experience dealing with this kind of a system and this kind of a setup, don't think that John Yarmuth isn't talking to his son about that paper or how to run it. That would just defy any kind of common sense or logic. So go ahead. Don't think John didn't know about it, because I personally believe he did. Go ahead.
It's definitely Daddy's money. I mean, there's no two ways about that. It's Daddy's money, because Aaron Yarmouth, I think I read one time, he's actually sort of a would-be pro golfer. He's supposed to be better than his daddy at golf. So I think, definitely Daddy's money, but I would think at some point if, you know, we don't know the whole story. As a business person, letting people go is tough. I can tell you that. It's the hardest part of anything, you know, aside from just working your ass into fatigue every night. But it's tough. And many times I've made the jokes about Leo. And I say, we don't know. Aaron Yarmouth, Daddy could have put the money up and says, okay, you're on your own. He could have cut the strings. Parents have done that before, in spite of the fact that there were, you know, in excess of $20 million. From a bunch of other companies that pay low wages and no insurance. But it's possible Aaron has to make this work on his own. Now, we don't know the story. He let those people go. Yes, he did. Were they underperforming? They could very well have just been underperforming, and he didn't want to paste them in public. You know, it's a diplomatic way of doing
it. Well, I got to say,
you know,
this.
We're downsizing. You know, we're letting these poor people go. Read between the lines, because they half suck at what they do. That's a potential, you know, but he doesn't want to say that in public. You don't want to rip somebody.
Well, here's the thing, though, Ed. Here's the thing, because
maybe escort service revenue is down, since that seems escort and bar revenue, advertising revenue is down, because that seems to be what the paper runs on.
Well, it really does. But staff writer April Corbin was let go, I think, Friday afternoon. Sarah Havens is the one who wrote the Bar Bell column, which is one of the most popular columns in Leo. She'd been there for 15 years. You know, so Aaron Yarmuth knocks everybody out, lays off everybody. He decides he's going to keep two people, Joe Sonka, staff writer Joe Sonka, and music and culture editor Peter Berkowitz. You know, and so he wants to increase his freelance writers. So this was his plan. But we have an update on this, Ed. It came out today, and many thanks to our good friend Paul Holliger with Stop It, who's in the chat room, putting up this link for us. Insider Louisville is now reporting that, you know, Leo Weekly's, the two people that he wanted to keep, Joe Sanka and Mr. Berkowitz, Peter Berkowitz, were asked to sign new employment contracts during an open meeting this morning with Aaron Yarmuth, and they walked out. Basically, what we're reading here is that Yarmuth was laying out plans for what he thought the future of Leo should be, and Joe Sanka said that the new working conditions were unacceptable. He gave him some specific terms. He said in order to be acceptable, he had to hire two additional editorial staffers within 2 weeks, so he needs to replace the two he just let go. He needs to hire a third editorial staffer within 2 months, and he needed to hire a sales manager to help boost revenue. And the fourth condition that Joe Sanka put down, and I kind of like, he said that Yarmuth had to fire the current Leo publisher, David Brennan, get rid of him completely, and that would help pay for all these hires. You know, and Berkowitz went on record to say that it would be almost impossible to put out a paper with two staffers, much less one. And the meeting lasted apparently about 2 hours, according to this source. It's with Insider Louisville. But here's the interesting kicker here, Ed, and this is why I still think John Yarmuth. Aaron Yarmuth told both Berkowitz and Sanka that he would relay this information to his fellow Leo Weekly investor, who is still unidentified, and he would get back with them as soon as possible. So let's look at this. He has a fellow investor who is unidentified, and nobody believes John Yarmuth's involved. He's got to get back with Daddy, in my opinion, so he can find out what he's going to do. But even Joe Sanka and Berkowitz said there's no way this paper can survive with that limited amount of people. There's no way to get it up. So is Aaron Yarmuth smart, or is he intentionally gutting this paper to rebuild it in some sort of image for his dad?
I have no idea. It's a, you know, I pick up a free copy every once in a while. It can have some funny articles in it, but yeah, I'll be real honest with you. By and large, it sucks. Now, anybody that's listening that has picked up a Leo, I just be honest with you. I mean, for a long time, I would pick it up, or somebody at work would pick one up, and you just kind of throw all the other articles away and get the news of the weird.
There you go.
But I mean, yeah, it's. I tell you what, it's a paper that when I read it, you kind of feel uneasy about it, because as you're flipping through, if you actually look at the pages, you know, no jokes. It is packed full of, you know, it's either bars or music stuff, you know, the eclectic scene, or it's full of escort service ads, which is just, you know, kind of weird. It's like, really? Yeah, no Otto or Tony Maito or anybody advertising in that? It's wow, you know.
Well, I mean, it's simple. I mean, they have turned themselves into basically begging for dollars.
It's an escort paper rag is what it is.
Well, Leo Weekly has always clearly been a Democratic, pro-Democratic, you know, magazine. You know, they'll put anybody in there as an advertiser. They're basically begging for dollars and advertising as cheap as they can possibly get it just to put a paper out. So it's not like I don't believe Leo Weekly, and I haven't done the research on this, folks, so I'm just talking off the top of my head here, okay? But based on a free publication, based on the amount of ads and everything else in there, based on an estimated ad revenue, Leo Weekly's not getting rich. All right, it's always been designed to pay for itself, make a little bit of money, you know, but basically push the Democratic agenda forward, if you will. You know, I have no problem with them going out of business if that's what they do. I just find it fascinating because Joe Sanka, of all people, you know, Joe Sanka is very much, you know, pro-Democrat. He's very much a Democrat-leaning writer who is a good fit for that avenue, if that's what you're into. You know, and Joe Sanka was so angry with the whole situation that he walked out because he just didn't feel he could do his job. You know, so I think that's interesting. I'm kind of curious to see how they bounce back for this, or you know, or what their next edition is going to be. I want to see if they're going to be able to make a new direction for Leo Weekly. I'll be honest with you. I have talked to people that know Aaron Yarmuth, and nobody's really impressed with him. If it wasn't for his daddy, you know, they don't believe he would have anything or do anything. to each their own. I wouldn't know on a personal level. But I find it fascinating that John Garmuth started a Leo, come into town, make sure his son gets the paper back, and the first thing they do is lose all their business. Interesting.
Yeah, run the staffers off while at the same time Daddy is doing a speech about raising minimum wage and lifting people out of the dumps. Yeah, the son chucks a couple people and boots them to the curb, you know, go get your unemployment check.
So is this coincidental? No. This can't be coincidental.
Yeah, it's weird, though. I mean, you would think, like I say, coincidence, it's politics, it's rich people. I don't know. It definitely seems like, you know, if I were John Yarmuth and I put, you know, my offspring in charge of a paper, I would at least tell him, say, look, you know, we've had a really good couple of years in the family businesses. Just maintain things, keep everybody happy, don't make any waves. It's an election year, but
right.
I think reading between the lines, the fact that they didn't do that speaks volumes to me as to just how confident Daddy is about winning his election. Because if it were a close race, you know, a la Mitch and Alice in Wonderland, if it were a close race, you can bet your butt Daddy would either have not have bought it or definitely would have put his foot down and says, no, you keep all the aggressive liberal writers happy and you don't make any waves until after I get elected. Then after that, you got two more years. You can do what you got. You know, you do whatever you think you got to do. But
right.
To me, that speaks volumes that John Yarmuth is absolutely confident about his reelection, or he wouldn't let that happen.
You know, that's it. So, I mean, there's something going on here. And I honestly think that, you know, it's either confidence on John Yarmuth's part about the reelection, which, you know, truthfully, I think he should be confident. I'm glad he has an opponent, and I will be voting for his opponent for sure. I think Doctor is very, very well liked. I think he's very knowledgeable, and I think that he can bring a new direction on Kentucky's behalf if he gets elected. You know, however, you know, at the end of the day, for Yarmuth to sit out here and start talking and yelling and ranting and raving and acting like raising the minimum wage at a time when this country has such high unemployment, you know, they're bragging now saying unemployment is only 6.8%, but that's only because people are dropping off the unemployment rolls. Once you quit qualifying to draw unemployment, they no longer count you. So that number is dropping through a natural progression because more and more people are falling out of their unemployment benefits, which ironically I believe is one reason Congress continues not to extend unemployment, because then we might get the real numbers, or at least closer to it. I just find all this not so coincidental that all this is going on at the same time his son is just basically decimated, Leo Weekly. And I tell you, there's another story that I really want to bring into this, Ed, because I want your opinion on this as well. Kentucky.com had a great story put out yesterday. It was talking. It was a story about why Kentucky can't build a strong economy. And when you look at this, it makes a lot of interesting comments here. There was a recent analysis done by economist Paul Coombs, make of him what you will, for the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce. And what Paul Coombs found was that the average pay per job in Kentucky last year was $46,400, or roughly 83.6% of the U.S. average of $55,600. Now, when we look at this average here, that certainly don't sound like everybody's making $7.25 an hour, right? So they were looking at this, and what they've really found is that Coombs discovered his findings are that Kentucky's post-recession job production means that we're going to have even worse times ahead. The biggest growth has been a sector called the employment services. Imagine us. We've been talking about that forever, which basically includes temporary workers with low pay and few benefits. What does that tell us?
Well, especially with, as you know, emphasis on temporary. Nobody's going to be around long enough to break the threshold to where you have to start getting benefits, or to where, you know, benefits like unemployment. Those benefits you won't make that threshold.
Well, that's the thing.
But,
and, you know, and you go on with this. 56% of Kentuckians tell us that the economy and jobs are the most pressing priority. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's a huge collection of stuff. Being in small business, I can tell you, Kentucky sucks when it comes to work comp. I mean, basically, you can present a work comp judge with a whole manila envelope full of reasons they shouldn't pay somebody, and they still will. So workman's comp sucks in Kentucky. Insurance sucks when you want to employ people. I mean, a number of years ago, the state legislature, in its infinite wisdom, you know, built up certain parameters where, I think it's four insurance companies in the state if you want to provide insurance for your employees. That sucks. The state pension sucks. And as it was once said, I think, by Barry Goldwater, deficits are really nothing but taxes waiting to happen. And, you know, businessmen know this. This is why Toyota left and went to Texas. They're looking at the state pension going, oh, crap. You know what that means, because, they, you know, anybody with a brain can look at it and what they supposedly fixed, they didn't fix. So do the math, you know, $30 billion or something, divide that into the number of residents or the number of businesses, somebody's going to get pounded in a few years for that. So I think our state is just so horribly mismanaged, and our politicians so in denial that the business community is looking at it and thinking, okay, maybe you can't connect the dots, but we sure as hell can. They're not hiring. They're not, and they're certainly not going to hire the high dollar jobs, because those are the ones that, you know, the tax burdens are going to be the highest on, when, you know, whether it's unemployment insurance or work comp insurance or you name it. It's, yeah, the government has just totally screwed the pooch, and their lack of leadership has made any business people, you know, especially the bigger business people, look at it with, you know, with huge payrolls and look at it and go, oh, no. This is not going to end well. It might not be bad right now, because we're still in denial. We're still able to sell bonds and pay our bills and rob Peter to pay Paul. But yeah, it's a disaster. So yeah, that surprised me at all.
Well, we look at the big picture here as well. You know, I mean, let's face facts here. You know, they continue to get creative each and every year. Our governor, our Congress, they continue to get creative each and every year. They continue to rob the Treasury. And what I mean by that is they continue giving out all of these tax incentives, all of these exemptions. There's almost 300 of these exemptions, according to the article. They call them tax expenditures, you know, and that's in our state budget. But what this is costing us every year is we're actually giving all these exemptions are actually costing us about $10 billion in taxes each year. That's almost the entire general fund. We could double that. You talk about education and infrastructure, right? Because of all these tax exemptions. But the problem is we have to give all these tax exemptions because Louisville and the state of Kentucky have taxed ourselves out of being competitive. Our tax rates are so high that if we can't give tax rebates or tax exemptions, then we're not going to attract any jobs at all. So they've created this circle jerk, if you will. And it is very, very fascinating. There is no way to review or evaluate these tax expenses or all these tax benefits or anything else. You know, so it's no wonder that temporary workers are the number one employees in job growth in 4 years. From 2009 to 2013, our state job growth has been led by 23,000 temp workers. Okay, and this is from the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, the Bureau of Labor Stats. So, you know, they're continuing to make this circle jerk by overtaxing us, then rebating some to some people, not giving it to other people. So they're costing us jobs on the people they're not giving it to, and they're keeping a handful of jobs on the people they are giving it to, but it's costing us $10 billion a year. What would that do to our education? What would that do to the infrastructure? Would we need the money to go for tolls on the bridges? I mean, you know, what's your opinion?
Yeah, but I agree. And it's, to me, it's, you know, we talk about journalists, the media being lazy. This is politicians being lazy. This is, you know, they take the easy route. They take the easy road, give tax incentives to certain companies. And when it comes to marketing the state, speaking in terms of these temporary companies, when it comes in terms of marketing our state, basically take it as an insult. What the governor or anybody else is out there saying about our state is, you know, come locate here. Our people work cheap.
Well, that's it. That's exactly it. And that's exactly why we continue getting such cheap jobs. We don't get good jobs. We get minimum wage, temporary warehouse jobs. You know, people in Riverport come and go like the wind, and nobody knows it. Nobody knows it. You know, and most of these warehouses over there who are making money are only paying, you know, $9 to $10 an hour. So this minimum wage hike doesn't mean anything to anybody. It's not going to change the direction or change the pay scales for the people who need it most, because they're already getting $10 an hour, and they can't live on that. You know, when we allow the temporary agencies to become the employers and cut everybody else out, and we continue to raise our tax structure in our government, you know, who continue to rob Peter to pay Paul, as you said a minute ago, that's very disturbing, and that's why we're headed in the direction we're at. I tell you, Ed, I tell you what else is disturbing. We are at the end of the hour. Man, that hour flew by. There's so many more things I wanted to get into. We'll work on that Wednesday night. Final thoughts, my friend?
No, final thoughts. You know, it's always. I'm cautioning people, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts or for being boiled like the frog. It happens all the time. I mean, in this case, we can apply it to the jobs market, since that's where we are right now. Is, you know, your governor and people, they stand up there, and the amazing thing is people don't even know they're being cut. You know, we don't even know we're being boiled and bled to death, because the governor and the congressman and the mayor and everybody, they show up for these huge press conferences and they talk a bunch of jobs. But when it gets right down to it, what they're not telling you is, you know, these people might actually have skill, but the jobs they're talking about, they might be big in number, but they lack quantity or lack quality. They got all this quantity, you know, we're going to hire 110 people this company is. It's like, yeah, and they're going to let 100 of them go in 60 days, and then they're going to reload. And, you know, yeah, it's creating jobs, but they're insulting us with it. And in effect, they're literally bleeding us out as a state. They're selling us up the creek. Come to Kentucky, our standard of living, you know, our cost of living is cheap, so our people work like, you know, yeah, they work like migrant workers for you. And you can treat them like that, too. Move them in and move them out. And the public stands for it, both the productives and the non-productives, the people who buy into this little crap, and even the people who, you know, sometimes I wonder, I ask myself, if I wasn't born here, would I actually locate here as a business, or would I look at Indiana? Because, yeah, to me, it's just another insult, you know, and it's probably one of the hardest insults for people to pick up is when they talk about jobs growth. But, yeah, the jobs growth they get is, by standards in other states and stuff, it's an embarrassment. You know, you've got politicians that they're cashing their checks and they're making sure that their family members are taken care of, you know, with higher up respectable jobs in some of these companies. But they're selling the people up the creek as far as it goes. So, you know, once again, we're being sold out. We're being sold. We're being, you know, states being auctioned off. And nobody seems to catch it because the slick politicians are standing up saying, look, we brought 13,000 jobs. Yeah, but none of them pay more than $15 an hour, you know, because you sold our state as a bunch of dumb hicks that will work for $15, you know, $13 an hour, $12 an hour.
Well, and I totally agree with you, man. You know, that seems to be the biggest thing. And the hypocrisy is not lost on me, but Congressman John Yarmuth is out there screaming about, we need to raise the minimum wage to $10, and that's going to grow the economy and create jobs, when at the same time his son just basically disintegrated Leo Weekly on the same day. I mean, that is the disturbing reality of what we're dealing with here, is the hypocrisy is not lost. When you take that on into the state government or the local government in the city of Louisville, when you put all these things together, you have to realize there's one common thing in line here, folks. And it's the liberal agenda. The liberals have created this agenda. The liberals have had all the control. And this is what we get. We continue being sold out for less. The prices of everything go up. We've taxed ourselves out of existence so we can't compete. if you talk about a standard of living is so poor so we could bring people into abuse, well, we're even trying to make that poorer, because now we're housing illegal immigrants at Fort Knox that we know of, and it's the second most important thing, according to the Paul Coon study. Immigration is the second most important issue to the people of Kentucky. So we really have to look at this and take a broader scope and quit this party division. You have to wake up and open your eyes, because if you don't wake up, we're going to continue going down the path to nowhere until there's nobody left to travel. That is not what we need in our state. That is not what we need in our city. It certainly is not what we need in the United States of America. What we're experiencing here is being experienced all across the country, and it's called failed leadership. And, folks, you elect the leaders. So you tell me who's to blame. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will be in here with his regular Tuesday night truth show. I will, of course, be back on Wednesday and Thursday night at 7 o'clock, same time, same channel. Mr. Barton, I guess we'll see you next week unless you decide to grace us with your presence.
All right, sir.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Folks, have a great week. We will talk to you on Wednesday. Take care.